Not necessary. Those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we're going to be looking forward in just a moment to our special guest here, who is at Radio Liberty, and of course, that's Glennon Caldwell. Glennon, thank you so very much for being with us today, and Glennon Caldwell, of course, is a Baptist minister. In fact, he's the minister who led me to the Lord here, I guess, about 42, 43 years ago. We've gone a long way together. Glennon, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, my privilege.
Can I have to speak right into that microphone?
Yes, my privilege for being here, Dr. Sten.
All right, fine. And we're going to be talking with Glennon today about his book, Death Goes to School. So, I mean, what motivated you to write the book, Glennon?
Well, I was motivated, as I observed over a long period of years, the continual decay of our public school system. So much so that I was motivated to start Baymont Christian School. But this doesn't eliminate my responsibility. And so I wrote the book to try to provide not only a revelation of how our school system came to decay as it has, but also to provide a sound, basic, scriptural answer or solution to the problem.
All right, fine. And of course, it's a fascinating book. It's only been out for a very short period of time, and it really starts out talking about what happened at Columbine. So I'm going to let Glennon Caldwell pick up the beginning of the story as it begins. It really begins at Columbine School, that fateful morning when Klebold and his friend, of course, began opening fire on their fellow students. So why don't you tell us the background and, of course, what the significance of what happened at Columbine School that morning is.
All right. I actually chose the title of the book, Death Goes to School, and gave the launching account of the Columbine experience simply to illustrate by an actual happening how literally the death of spirituality, the death of values, of traditional family values and standards have died, and thus death has gone to school. But as Harris and Klebold murdered those 12 students and one teacher, and I believe 23, 26, I'm not real sure of the number who were injured. But I come to realize in a careful study not to excuse their action, but to recognize that they were victims as well. Victims of a lack of parental supervision of instruction, of training.
But don't you think that perhaps even the school bears a responsibility? They were teaching these kids about death education and suicide education, and certainly giving these young people sort of this sense of hopelessness, because if there is no God, then, well, of course, life is rather futile. And, of course, life is tough, and then you die. There has to be something more to life than simply living 67 years.
Oh, sure, and that, I think, was my second point. Not only that it was a parental failure, but also the failure of the school system and the philosophy that prevailed.
And of course, actually, that Columbine School was an experimental school. They were using all sorts of new games and tricks on the minds of the students. And I think what happened there at Littleton High School was an example of that.
Well, as you and I have discussed in the past, Sten.
This is Dr. Sten here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Glennon Caldwell. We're going to be talking about his book, Death Goes to School. And, of course, this is certainly a discussion of what's happening on the educational system, what's happening to our families today. And Glennon, of course, starts the book out talking about what happened at Columbine back, what was about a decade ago now, when, of course, we had this terrible, terrible incident. So you pick up the story there. Certainly, the whole idea of using Columbine as the background for this book, Death Goes to School, is to point out really the failure of the parents, the failure of the educational system, the total failure of our society to meet the needs of our children. So please, Glennon, go ahead.
Yes, as you examine carefully the background for Harris and Klebold, you find that there had been a total failure, failure to give them instruction in the home and supervision, discipline, direction. But the school system, which has over a period of time been designed really by forces of evil, we might say. You and I have talked about this in the past, Stan, of how there is an evil force in the world. I remember so well when you first came to church and you were in a position really of unbelief, but I recall specifically how you said to me that you came to the realization that there was an evil force in the world, and thus this brought you to realize that there must be a force for good.
You can remember that all 40 years ago, huh?
those were significant days.
Yes, they really were.
When you made a commitment of your life to Christ. But the point is that this evil force, however you might entitle it, and I have sort of entitled it as secular humanism, but whatever the title, that evil force has been at work throughout history, really, to destroy us. But it's only in the 20th century that it comes into full bloom, maybe in the 30s, under the teaching of John Dewey, when he began to propound the theory of progressive education. John Dewey, we'll recall, was an endorser and possibly the author of the Humanist Manifesto.
Yes, certainly he was a signer of the Humanist Manifesto, and those of you who haven't read it really need to get it. There is a plan, a master plan. We'll be right back. Well, our guest is Glennon Culwell, Pastor Glennon Culwell, and we're talking talking about his book, Death Goes to School. And, of course, he talks about this evil force that's in the world. He calls it secular humanism. He's talking about John Dewey, who is one of the founders of the secular humanist movement, signed the Humanist Manifesto, and certainly used the educational system, which he was an important part as a teacher at one of our major teachers' universities, I believe it was Columbia University, as they began shaping the views of the teachers who would then teach our students. So pick up the story there.
Yes, well, Dewey propounded the theory that there could be no standards, absolute standards, that there was not such a thing. And thus, standards and values could not be taught in the school. He also debunked the possibility of discipline. There could no longer be any discipline. And as his teachings and the teachings of others infiltrated our universities and colleges, then ultimately there was produced teachers who would bring this into the lower levels of education, even into elementary schools, high schools, and thus this same view began to perpetuate and began to destroy a system that in your life, Stan, in my life, that we treasured and saw values extolled, Americanism upheld, patriotism was alive and well in our schools.
And, of course, those days are long since gone. Today our children are being indoctrinated in internationalism and in relativism, and, of course, they're being turned against their parents, and their belief in God and family and country are effectively undermined.
Yes, and I think my major thrust is the role of the family, and their efforts was to destroy all of the authority, all of the foundation of the family. And this really comes into clear view as we take a look at the feminist extreme, feminist movement. It sounds so noble that the woman should be equal to the man, and that that the woman should have equal wages, and so on. Those are noble causes, but they took those noble causes and perverted them and have set forth to destroy the roles of the family, the parent-child relationship. And, of course, the mother has always been the very center of the family, and this would be the area that they would attack the greatest. It's interesting to note that Betty Friedan, one of the humanist stripe, said that a housewife, and I emphasize that word, housewife, a housewife is a parasite. And the emphasis upon the fact that unless the woman has gone out of the home with a job and all of the other interests, she is a parasite and is leading an absolute meaningless life. And this is the view that has been perpetuated by the humanists in our school system. And so the schools have literally taken over the role of parents. And this is the goal that the enemy has set before us, and that is that the school has all of the answers, better so than parents, and so the parents really have little role in instructing and training their children.
And, of course, the idea of women's liberation went right along with sexual liberation. Why shouldn't a woman be able to be just as promiscuous as a man was? The only trouble is that, of course, when she has the children, ordinarily she's stuck with them, her life is destroyed, and the man goes off. Women's liberation was wonderful for men. Sexual liberation was wonderful for men. But, of course, so many women have paid a terrible price for it. And all of this has led to what we have in America today, where we have 60 million people, according to the CDC, with a sexually transmitted viral disease. The end of sexual liberation, the end of women's liberation.
Yes, but this kind of liberation has been the downfall of our system, our educational system, and that of the family. It's interesting that as the plan of the enemy comes into full bloom and light, it's interesting to note that it really comes into clear focus when the United Nations decrees in, 1975, that this was the year of the woman. And this was initiated by a group, the Women's Democratic Federation, and in their publication, Women of the Whole World, they set out three goals. Number one was reproductive freedom, and that's just a fancy name for abortion or abortion on demand. And then again, secondly, they set forth a goal for sexual preference. And this is just a goal to legitimize homosexuality as an acceptable value. And then again, they said it should be non-sexist education at all levels. And there's really the key, Stan. They are blurring all of the roles of the family. You see, a housewife was never a secondary occupation. It's interesting to note, and you've heard this undoubtedly, women in the past who would say, when they were asked, what do you do? They would say, oh, I'm just a housewife. But a housewife is an assigned role by God and is perhaps the most noble occupation available that we have. But their goal was to destroy the role of the woman so that no longer there was that bond with the children and building thus values into their lives would be impossible.
This whole idea that the women actually had to go out and get a profession and compete in the world and make a lot of money, and that was really that would be their success. They could compete. They were as smart as men, and they are as smart as men, and many things they can do very, very well. But of course, by taking the mother out of the home, they'll put that child adrift.
Yes, and again, it's interesting further that they had a very careful scheme, recognizing now that they're going to take the mother out of the home. They have to take care of the children some way, and so they began to design their child care and preschool movement so that they can literally govern the lives and mold the lives of our children almost from birth.
And of course, that's really what this whole preschool movement is about. They want to put out $2.8 billion. They want us to vote on that. It is part of a program to get the children away from their parents. Why? Because they want to mold their values, their attitudes, and beliefs. And if they don't get the child until they're 5 or 6 years old, it's much harder. I mean, by that time, they have loyalty to their parents. They have maybe even have some loyalty to God and concept of God. The whole drive for preschool today is a carefully coordinated program by those people who would destroy the very soul of our children, and they're putting billions of dollars into this program to get it passed, to get us the idea that, oh, children are going to be so much better off. If they just go to preschool, they're going to do so much better. And it's all a lie. The studies show there's not a bit of truth in it, but then who's going to tell the American people that? After all, you saw it on television. It must be true.
Yes, and it's interesting where the source of this lie comes from. It comes right out of the United Nations, comes out of the feminist movement. And let me just share a little bit about the goals of the International Year of the Child, for example, that followed closely on the heels of the International Year of the Woman. And they said in that their number one goal was liberation from traditional morals and values. And a part of their statement was that the real solution requires a fundamental change in the value commitments and the actions of the persons who control the public and private sector. And then later they say, daycare is a powerful institution. A daycare program that ministers to a child from 6 months to 6 years has over 8 hours to teach him, listen to this, to teach him values, fears, beliefs, and behavior. Now, Stan, isn't it interesting that when parents
are in total control of our educational system, the total control of many of our parts of our government, of our great industries, of our great tax-exempt foundation, they're in total control of the minds of our children.
Yes, sir. Let me go ahead.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Pastor Glennon Culwell. And go ahead, pick up the story there, Glenn.
Yes, I was just talking about the goals of the United Nations stated in the Year of the Child, advocating liberation from parental authority. And it's interesting that they note the child must be protected from practices which may foster racial, religious, or any other form of discrimination. So it's very clear that their warfare is against God and every standard for good. Furthermore, they said that they had as a goal liberation from nationalism and patriotism. And this statement is interesting. As long as a child breathes the poisoned air of nationalism, education and world-mindedness can only produce precarious results. And listen carefully. It is frequently the family that infects the child with extreme nationalism. So, isn't it a sin that we, as parents, cause our children to be patriotic.
But, of course, these people on the other side have no loyalty to America at all. These people are loyal to this idea of a world government run by a world ruling elite. They're globalists. And they permeated every aspect of our society like termites.
Yes, absolutely. And it's good, I think, Stan, for us to think about their methods in achieving their goals. And they've stated that they would achieve them by non-governmental organizations, what we call NGOs. Now, that could be anything from our local church to some other organization. But the organizations that we know that destroy our fabric today are such organizations as the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, the National Organization of Women Now, Planned Parenthood, Charlotte Bunch, speaking in an NGO forum, said these conservative reactionary forces, whether nationalistic or religious or both, all seek to control women. And, of course, their goal was really to control women. It's just who was going to do the controlling.
Amen to that. And, of course, the great tragedy is so many women have bought into this and have ruined their lives as a result of it. There is no sexual liberation. God did not intend us to be sexually liberated. He meant for us to be faithful to our partners during our whole lives.
Oh, sure. God's Word gives us a very careful outline of the roles that each family member, or the role that each family member is to fulfill. And when we fulfill those roles, there is wonderful harmony and the bonding of relationships, and the values can be perpetuated. But then when you destroy those roles, all of the fabric, really, of a decent society are up for the highest bidder.
And of course, this is what we're seeing with the moral anarchy in our society and the breaking down of the very structure of our society and the increasing tempo of violence, and as we move into a period, I believe, of chaos and crisis in a nation that has turned its back on God. And then we wonder why God is no longer bringing peace and tranquility to our nation. We'll be back in just a moment here with Pastor Glennon Culwer here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Pastor Glennon Culwer. We're talking about his book, Death Goes to School. And really, of course, the factors that have been working in our society to destroy the fabric of the family, and one of them certainly was women's liberation and feminism. It was never designed to help women. It was designed to enslave women and, of course, to take away their position which they had in society, which was one of honor and respect, and now we can send them off to the battlefield to be killed just like men. Isn't that wonderful? And you see the pictures of the women who've lost an arm or a leg, or horribly disfigured, going into battle, which they never should be. No Christian country would send women into war. But go ahead, pick up the story, Glenn.
All right, well, after talking about the destruction of the role of the mother, of the woman, again, it's interesting to note the identity of the enemy. And it's almost laughable, but if it were not so serious, an article in the Los Angeles Times, I think all the way back in the 90s, well, no, not the 70s of the 20th century, they talked about children, and I'm quoting, liberating children from the home and from their parents through child care development centers. And they quoted, or yes, quoted, the study from the Soviet system. And listen to this statement, Stan. They wrote, with one of the most massive and highly organized child care programs in the world, the Soviet Union has freed millions of mothers for work and provided their children from 2 months to 7 years of age with a place to stay from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. or even overnight. And interestingly, Janice Gibson, a University of Pittsburgh professor, after studying the Soviet system for, I think, 6 years, said in part, and I quote, "The USSR is the first country with a mass centrally controlled preschool program available to all and designed to affect personality." So once again, you see that the model that was followed was the Soviet model, a godless, atheistic, socialistic, humanistic model.
And I think what most Americans don't understand is that the United States has funded the Soviet Union since its inception. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or Professor Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, or so many of the other books that we have, of course, in our catalog, to find out that the United States created the Soviet Union, financed the Soviet Union, and used it for these wonderful socialist experiments, just like we did in communist China. And, of course, that wonderful article written by David Rockefeller in August of 1973, after he had returned from a trip to China. And, they had already killed 100 million people at this time, 100 million people. And David Rockefeller wrote, the social experiment in China under the leadership of Chairman Mao is one of the most important and significant in history. The social experiment in China under the leadership of Chairman Mao is one of the most important and significant in history. And when you understand how the elitists feel about human suffering and mass murder, it's all a social experiment. No compassion, no concern. They're just trying to make a better world, and do all these social experiments to figure out how to do it. Maybe they ought to try God's method, don't you think?
I think so. And, of course, that's ultimately the aim of all that I've written, is to endeavor to get people to try God's way. And as you talked about our government doing the financing, it's interesting that the NGO, or the National Education Association, the NEA, was funded by grants from the government in developing the child care program. And it's interesting to note, for example, that the American Federation of Teachers Union advocates taking the children from 3 years or even younger to teach. And then the NEA, the National Association of Education, endorses formal education at the age of two. And so the state, once again, not only funds, but the state has taken control through our schools, the teaching and the training of our children without principle, without values, without the godly standards.
And of course, what they do is they come up with something called values clarification. You know, the story of the lifeboat, and you have to make the decision who's going to get tossed out of the lifeboat, who's going to live, and who's going to die. And so much of what they're doing in our schools really is values clarification, really is moral teaching. Only, of course, what they're doing is teaching your children not to respect life or not to respect God. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Pastor Glennon Colwell. And Glennon, we'll go right ahead with you.
Well, it's the subject is so great, it's sort of hard to get a real handle on the subject. Taking a try at the way that our schools endeavor to control totally the teaching of the children. It's interesting, a few years ago, I sat in a school board meeting. The school board was debating whether or not to permit elementary age children to leave the school grounds for counseling without parental support. And of course, this greatly concerned a large number of parents who signed petitions, and the meeting room that evening was just totally packed with those protesting this goal. And it's interesting to note that the school board took the position, as propounded by the professional leaders, that children could not talk to their parents. And as a result, in spite of all of the movement of the parents and the demand of the parents, the school went ahead and did what they wanted to do. When we were in school, we had local control, and parents exerted influence. But now, parents are not equipped. It's interesting, and this is quite recent, the ruling of the Ninth Circuit Court, and it's interesting, and I quote from their ruling. They said, and I quote, "There is no fundamental right of parents to be exclusive provider of information regarding sexual matters to their children. Parents have no due process or privacy right to override the determinations of public schools as to the information to which their children will be exposed while enrolled as students." And of course, the infamous Judge Stephen Reinhart, writing for the panel, would say, and I quote, "No such specific right can be found in the deep roots of the nation's history and tradition or implied in the concept of ordered liberty."
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Pastor Glennon Caldwell right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Glennon was just saying that we have a situation where we have the courts have decreed that the parents really have no rights as far as, you know, the children being taken off for abortions. What they have done is essentially say that the children belong to the state. The parents don't understand these issues. The parents can't talk to their children. The only people, of course, who can do this is the school officials. And what people do not understand is the origin of these concepts, which really come from Plato's Republic, that all children belong to the state. And that really is the prototype of the communist movement, and of course the movement which is blooming and which is growing here in the United States. The state is all powerful. Of course they want to have everybody subservient to the ruling elite, and of course they want to break down the family, and they want to take control of the child away from the parent. And that's what the whole preschool movement is. That's what our educational system is. If they're trying to educate our children, they're doing a terrible job. If they're trying to change their attitude towards God, family, and country, they're doing a great job. And all we need to do is note that when our children are ready to graduate from high school and they are tested academically with students from out the rest of the world, we are among the lowest level in the entire world. How could that be with all the money we put out unless there's another agenda for education? And people have to understand. Well, they say, well, my child and my grandchild are doing very well. They're getting great grades. But talk to them and see about how much they really know about the real world and about science. Where are the people coming from, the computer jobs? They're coming into America from India because they can't find enough sophisticated and excellent computer programmers here in the United States, and they're coming in by the hundreds of thousands every year. We got a real problem with our educational system, and most parents would rather not want to be bothered rather than take the time to read a book like the one we're talking about, Death Goes to School. And incidentally, Glennon, how can people get copies of this book?
Well, right now I would suggest perhaps that they could contact Radio Liberty.
All right, fine. If you'd like to get a copy of this excellent book, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. The book is Death Goes to School. And, of course, it not only talks about the problem, it talks about the solution, and we'll be getting into that tomorrow here with Glennon. But go ahead, Glennon, and why don't we just go ahead with your discussion.
All right. Well, we were talking about the way the schools have endeavored to take over the children. And I think I need to make this statement or this qualification, and that is that there are some good, outstanding principal teachers. And I know godly teachers, but it's interesting in preparing the way of Christ, John the Baptist came as a voice crying in the wilderness, and that's just simply the way that the good teachers really are today. They're like voices crying in the wilderness. And the tools that they are given, the administration, leaders have given them tools, and these tools give them direction. I think that we talked a little bit earlier about the quote from Prentice Hall's school textbook on economics, entitled Building Your Life. And let me just quote, here's a way that they are usurping the role of parents. For example, on page 123, the textbook says, "Are your parents old-fashioned? Do they ever embarrass you by the things they say or do in the front of their friends? Are they often unreasonable? If so, perhaps you have tried to keep your feelings about it to yourself. But if you have talked to your friends about your difficulties with your parents, you have found that your friends have most of the same complaints and that they have as well."
Now, talk about trying to build a wedge between the child and the parent. Why would they put that in the textbook unless they were trying to separate the child from the parent and the parental authority?
Oh, obviously so. And they would go ahead to write, "If you and your classmates would write on slips of paper the three things that bother you the most about your parents, and then have a committee summarize the results, there would probably be a large measure of agreement on the troublesome traits in parents. Why do parents behave as they do?" Obviously, those are words designed to undermine the role of parents and to say to the children, the teacher, the school system, this is the place, this is the depository of truth, not your parents.
Plato would really be very happy to know what they're doing in our schools today.
Yes, in light of what he said. And let me just wrap that part up with one other statement from this textbook. And it's so telling that people need to understand that this is what their children are getting. And that just this brief statement, "But it is still aggravating to have to try to cope with parents who boss too much and set old-fashioned and unreasonable standards and don't realize that a person has a right to some privacy in life."
And what grade is this? How old are these children?
Oh, this was a home economics, and I would accept a high school textbook.
Fine.
Yes,
right.
But it just highlights what some of our children are getting, what all of them are getting in different doses, and parents simply are not aware.
I don't think most parents are not going to read the home economic textbook and realize how the purpose of the school is to turn the child against the parent.
Yes, and it's interesting, just recently, what was it, in the last week, the proposed legislative act regarding including homosexuals' contributions in our school curriculum. I think reading from the newspaper quote, it says the bill would require California social science textbooks to include the contributions of gays, bisexuals, and transgender people to the state and the nation's history.
Well, we got a real problem when that is going to be put into our textbooks in total violation of God's law. Because everything that's going on today, it really is to actually dramatically change our attitude towards God. And God has said that homosexuality is wrong. And he lists a number of things that are wrong. Sexual immorality is wrong. So why would we be, you know, going ahead and promoting that sort of thing? It would be like promoting sexual immorality in our school and adultery and the things that God has said are wrong. You know, why would we want to be flaunting God unless, of course, everything, you know, is one of these days God is going to bring his judgment on this country. I have no question. I think it's coming very soon. And where is the outcry from our people? And why are more people calling in? If you have a question or comment for our guest, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And how many people out there in the audience can list 20 things that the homosexuals have done for our society that have made it a better society? And I don't think you're going to find very many things that they've done. Some homosexuals are very talented people. But the process of homosexuality is simply rebellion against God and God's plan.
Yes, and this has being the been the indoctrination in my own school system, or in the school system where I live, in the high school. There have been posters touting the homosexual lifestyle. And when parents protested, they just branded all of us as homophobes and extremists, radicals, and protest and say this is an acceptable lifestyle.
Well, I think that if you really care about homosexuals, you would tell them that, you know, 250,000 homosexuals have died of AIDS totally unnecessarily in this country. In fact, of the new cases of AIDS, at least half of them, almost half of them, are in homosexuals, and yet they only make up a small portion of our population. Homosexuality is unhealthy, and if you hate homosexuals, tell them what they're doing is all right. If you care about homosexuals, tell them what they're doing is wrong. And it appears that nobody wants to tell them. Nobody dares say what you're doing is wrong. It's wrong because God says it's wrong. It's wrong because it leads to disease. It's wrong because the average homosexual dies at 40 or 41. And if you hate homosexuals, you encourage them to do just what they're doing because they're going to die young.
Yes, what I say is not to say that I hate homosexuals either. The fact is that we are to love the sinner. But it's clear, according to the law of God, that homosexuality is not lawful, it's ungodly, it's revulsive, it's unnatural. And for our schools to be champions of this kind of lifestyle and put it on an equal footing with God's plan that has designed the family with man and wife, man and woman, by saying to us that we must leave our wives and cleave to the woman. It's interesting. A friend of mine said recently that the Bible doesn't say leave and cleave to Steve, and maybe that's a little bit of a humor, and maybe it's misplaced. But the point, once again, is that this is just a simple part, or simply a part, of the whole undermining of the morality of our country, of our families, of our world, actually.
We live in a fallen world, but the trouble is it's falling even more and very more rapidly than ever before.
Well, maybe I ought to deal a little bit with my own profession and talk a little bit about what maybe the church and pastors ought to be doing in dealing with the problem. It's interesting that the Bible says that we are to resist the devil. But I find very few churches really resisting the devil. We have too much of a feel-good type of religion where everybody wants to feel good, and so this is the popular course today.
I can remember I can remember going to church every Sunday morning when Glennon preached the service. And, of course, he was always, of course, bringing up the fact we were all sinners saved by grace. You didn't necessarily feel good when you left the service, but you felt convicted and you were going to do a better job the next week. And that's a message that has stood Christianity in good stead for 2,000 years. Isn't it a shame we've turned our back on it and we want to make everybody feel good about themselves rather than recognize our fallibility as human beings?
Yes, we really need to take a stand. The Bible says very clearly that we are to stand fast, that we are to resist the devil. And yet the popular thing is to make everybody feel good and be happy. And Dr. Sten, I'm not sure what is going to change the direction, but we must speak out, and that's the purpose of the book that I've written. And I just hope that people will read it. I've ministered for 50 years now, and perhaps my life may even be coming close to the end. Obviously, must be close to the end.
We're about the same age.
Yes. I'm a little older than you are. And so my only interest now is not the dollar that the book might sell for, but rather for readers, for people who will really read it. And there is a responsibility on the part of every individual. Sometimes us older folks say, well, we reared our children, and so now we have no responsibility. But the Bible makes it absolutely clear that the elder must teach and lead the younger. And there is a great value placed upon the elder sister, citizen. And so I know, Stan, that you are giving your life to try to spread the word and stand for God and godly standards. And if only a few others, maybe we could light that candle that would illuminate the darkness.
Well, our job is to do our best, and it's up to God to help for the harvest. So you do your, and I think your book has been a great contribution. What I do, I think what a privilege it is to be able to talk to people all across America from our little studio here in our home. And yet, of course, we know that people, you know, in Europe and in Asia and in Africa listen to our programs, and hopefully at least some of them will learn. And the message, and I think the message you're putting out is so clear today, Glennon, and that is we live in a fallen world, and it is not happening by accident. There is a coordinated, certainly organized attack on Christianity and on everything that the Bible stands for. And, of course, you refer to it as secular human. It doesn't matter what we call it. These people on the other side know what they're doing. But the average individual, even the average Christian, doesn't understand because their minister is not telling them.
Oh, sure. I've called it secular humanism. Secular simply indicates without God. Humanism is that man is the sinner. Man has all of the answers. He doesn't need God. He doesn't need the wisdom of God, the power of God. But man within himself is all-powerful, and thus he ends up giving all of the power to the state and just relieves himself of any responsibility that he might have for himself.
Well, our job is to make people understand that they're going to have to get educated, they're going to have to get involved, and if we don't stand for righteousness, who will? And not now, when? America, I believe, is on the brink of being destroyed. I believe that the immigration invasion will transform America and bring in literally hundreds of millions of new people in this next 20 years. We will become a multicultural, multilingual society. I think we're moving into a financial catastrophe. I think we're moving towards war with Iran. And ladies and gentlemen, these are just a few of the things that lie ahead. But should we be surprised? America has turned its back on God. Should we be surprised that God may very well be turning his back on America? And I believe that the only thing that's going to change anything is another great awakening, another great revival in America. I don't see it coming, but I pray that it will.
Well, one person is...
Well, Glennon, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, just in those 3 minutes, I think that I would admonish the listeners, as the Bible says in 1 Corinthians 16:13-14, watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong, let all that you do be done in love. We need to be people of strong convictions. I have ministered for almost 50 years now. And too often people have said to me, "Oh, that's wonderful, Glennon. What wonderful truth." Only to go out and do nothing. And it's imperative that you find out the truth and that you share it with others and that you do something about it yourself. In the days ahead, I think that maybe we'll have an opportunity to talk more about the book. And I want to be able to emphasize in that the solution resides with the family. A God-empowered, a godly family. And the balance of this book really deals with the parent-child relationship. How to train up a child. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he is old, he'll not depart from it." And so we'll think about what it means really to train. How can you train? What is meant by the word child? And what is the way that the child should go? There's a great misconception of what that verse of Scripture means. And so we find then that the solution is to be Bible-based as we talk about family relationships, training, and discipline.
Well, of course, tomorrow we're going to have Pastor Glennon Colwell back with us once again, and we'll be discussing then not the problem, but the solution to the problem. And so Glennon will be here, and we're going to talk more about what he's written in his book, Death Goes to School. We live in a nation that is moving into chaos and crisis. We're moving into a nation that many of you will not recognize as we change the racial makeup of this nation, as we see more and more of our industries and our jobs moving overseas. And then, of course, the war clouds, the war drums are certainly beating louder, the war clouds that can be seen on the horizon. The only thing that's going to change America is our personal relationship with our Lord. So until tomorrow, Glennon, we look forward to having you with us then.
Thank you. I look forward to being here.
Well, this is Arthur Stan, and our guest this afternoon has been Pastor Glennon Colwell, and Glennon will be with us again tomorrow afternoon as we begin talking about the solution to the problem. He's raised the problem, but tomorrow we'll talk about the solution from a biblical foundation. So until then, we hope many of you will think seriously about getting the book, Death Goes to School. If you'd like to know more about it, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and tomorrow we'll talk about the solution to the problem that we've raised. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us. And so if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our 4 best tapes of the month, or CDs, and you'll get our monthly newsletter. And then, of course, you can simply subscribe to the newsletter. But, of course, we will give you an analysis of what's really going on in the world behind the scenes. If you'd like to get a copy of our latest newsletter, which discusses the angel that rides in the whirlwind and directs the storm, the reference, of course, comes from George Bush's first inaugural speech. He actually uses that phrase twice. The angel that rides in the whirlwind and directs his storm, and he lets the people who analyze his speech realize this is the real agenda behind what's going on today. But what's the agenda? Who is the angel? What is he talking about? Why would he use that phrase twice? Well, you need to get my latest newsletter, the April newsletter. It'll be posted up on our webpage at RadioLiberty.com. Or, if you'd like to get a free copy, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And it's going to be a controversial letter, because there are things in that letter I didn't like to realize, and yet I had to accept it, because it is truth. And now my job is not to tell you what you want to hear, but tell you what really is going on in the world today. And that we face very, very serious problems. So if you'd like to get a free copy of our April newsletter, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Now, we hope that many of you will get our book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You'll get our talk on the World Revolution, where you'll actually see my interview with Ambassador Smith. Ambassador Smith, who was the American ambassador to Cuba in 1958, when we turned Cuba over to Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro didn't win the revolution. He didn't have any support from the vast majority of the Cuban people. The church didn't want him, the people didn't want him, but our government wanted him, and we installed Fidel Castro. And you have to ask yourself, did that really happen? I thought he won the revolution. Well, you'll be fascinated when you see a revolution that I personally filmed with Ambassador Earl T. Smith back in 1980. That the World Revolution, and then there's so much other information available at Radio Liberty. If you're concerned about what's happening financially, my talk on the financial tsunami, and of course the syllabus that goes with that. If you want to understand the war in Iraq and why we are really there, Iraq, the Untold Story, the video, the syllabus, you really want to get the two of them together. If you want to understand sustainable development, the four-tape set, the video, the syllabus will give you the information and the documents you need so you can discuss this intelligently with other people. So we do hope, of course, you'll go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And that you'll pull down our newsletters and read them. You can listen to our programs there live, directly 3 hours a day. And, of course, link to our other sites 2 hours a day, 5 hours a day of Internet, 4 hours a day of shortwave. And then, of course, you can listen to our archive programs and our MP3 programs. We encourage you to tell others about our programs. Because, of course, unfortunately, most people are not going to tell you about the spiritual battle in which we're engaged, a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow, when Glennon will be with us again, may the Lord be with you.